theme that I like. It's kind of cute. Probability models and inference for clustering for random partitions. It's a very popular thing now, especially as we see more and more massive data in all kinds of situations. One of the things we do is clustering. And let's see whether we get this to life. I don't get, it says touch to activate. Oh, here we go.
I think that should show up there.
Okay, so that should be a verbatim cop mirror of this one. And is the system on?
It's coming on. It takes a minute.
Okay. then I might as well start taking questions before they talk.
No.
As we go along, feel free to chip in any time. I'll try to make it like rather non-technical, the whole discussion, because I assume I have like 50 minutes or so, right? Is anything coming there? Nope. So maybe go here to system power.
That might be it, yeah.
Oh, we still have to turn it on probably. Display system is off. Did it beep? That's called the demonstration effect. Is it coming?
Yeah.
Very good. So I'll start with one picture version of the entire talk. This is like the executive summary. And then for the rest of the time, I'll just fill in the details. Yeah. So what this is, it's protein activation, like the columns are different proteins. The rows are different patients. By the way, watch as I talk. I'm planning to cheat you big way on two things. I'll tell you in the end what it was, yeah? If you catch me in between, by all means, yeah? So if there's something not quite kosher, scream, yeah? don't worry if you don't catch it. I'll tell you in the end. These are breast cancer patients. So in the rows are different patients. The notion is, with respect to different biologic processes, these patients might cluster. Like the hope is, if the patients cluster together in certain groups, maybe those are like subpopulations whose disease has like a different mechanism, different cause, like different things that they should target, that they should attack to treat these patients. So maybe patients in the first block need a different treatment than patients in the second block. That's the eventual hope. But we are not going to talk about that. At this moment, we'll just talk about trying to group patients with respect to biologic processes. So the blocks of rows that you see, those are like different clusters of patients with respect to some of the columns. So grouping patients, clustering, are you all familiar with the mathematical notion of a partition? Like a partition is when you split a set of experimental units, in our case, patients, yeah? So when you split your set of patients into subsets that are non-overlapping and that cover the entire, they cover all the experimental units, that's called a partition, right? And equivalent, people often use the term clustering, especially in the context of deterministic algorithms. If you take a class in machine learning or so, they'll talk you through a lot of clustering algorithms, probably, yeah? So the idea is we want to cluster patients into groups or into subpopulations that are hopefully similar and have something in common. It's a very popular game. Many people do that, yeah, in biostatistics, bioinformatics. And to some degree, it's kind of a weird thing to do because See, like, we might cluster together with respect to our music tastes, yeah? But maybe with respect to our interests in math, maybe he has totally different interests, yeah? Shouldn't it be that the patients might cluster together with respect to one biologic process, but maybe with respect to another biologic process, they cluster entirely differently, yeah? And that's what we are trying to capture here. Do you see that with respect to different column sets, you get different clusters of the patients? Like with respect to this column set, the patients cluster into just three different subpopulations. With respect to the first column set, they cluster into four different subpopulations. So we want to cluster patients in a way that explicitly acknowledges that with respect to different biologic processes, they might cluster differently. Or same thing in different words, we are not going to go after one global clustering. I think that's pushing it too far. There's no such thing as one partition of people in the world. I mean, with respect to different things, we cluster totally differently, right? So we want to explicitly acknowledge that patients cluster differently with respect to different processes. And there's the notion that biologic processes correspond to different sets of proteins, yeah? If you go to BioX talks, you must have seen these beautiful pictures of pathways, yeah? There's these hypothetical ways of how one protein or one gene controls another, which controls yet another. So you get like sets of proteins that are thought to be related to one biologic process. There's another set of, say there is one set of genes, there's one set of proteins that trigger, I don't know, the inflammatory pathway, like when you get inflamed or something, there's like a process that triggers that and controls that. And so patients might cluster differently with respect to, say, inflammatory response than with respect to something else. We want to explicitly allow for that. So rather than one global clustering, there's different clustering with respect to different biologic processes. And we use here the notion, we use the fiction probably. The different biologic processes correspond to different subsets of proteins. And there's one more important thing. When you talk with like basic scientists or clinicians who collect such data, they're always very enthusiastic, yeah? They have like their favorite story of how patients should cluster with respect to these markers, and it's wonderful and blah blah, yeah. And usually they are right in many ways. But usually what might happen is in this particular example, it's a little bit a stylized example. Later we'll see real data. Yeah. In this particular example, there's 20 proteins, and we explicitly allow for the fact that maybe some of these proteins have nothing to do with the biology of interest. Are you familiar with the following? You all know regression, right? Have you ever seen a regression that you don't like? Like if there's a regression of something on something and you just don't like the conclusion, yeah? Here's one way to spin the thing, yeah? So if you do a regression and you don't like the inference that comes out, just add many totally useless covariates, yeah? As you add more and more noise into the system, does it sound plausible to you that your power will suffer? You say nothing. You're almost like my probability 2 class, yeah? They never say nothing either. Chip in as we go along. Yeah? I have no fixed program. If we get stuck with this slide, it's just as good because the rest is then just putting numbers to this slide, yeah? So if you don't like the inference that you see, if you don't like what comes out of a regression, like I don't know if the inference is if you want to have better grades, you have to get up earlier or something. It's probably not true, yeah? But say that where the, you get like data on when do you get up and what's your GPA, and you can do a regression, and the result is you should get up at 6 in the morning. If you don't like that, yeah, just add like many more covariates. Sooner or later, there will be so much noise in the data that the actual signal gets swamped. Does that sound plausible to all of you? A lot of that is happening in these studies, yeah? See, with respect to these first 12 proteins, there's actually some meaningful clustering of the patients. But with respect to these last few guys, they just don't seem to be related to the disease of interest. Yeah, that happens often. Sometimes it happens on purpose. Experimenters might deliberately include some proteins or some genes where they know something just to control that the experiment kind of works, yeah, the experimental setup. So we want to explicitly allow for some proteins not to give rise to a partition of the patients, And so you see the two last block, we don't try to draw horizontal lines. And similarly, within each column cluster, do you notice that the last few blocks, they move synchronized, right? Like at first protein here, it's suppressed for everyone. The second one, it's highly activated for everyone, but in a synchronized fashion, right? That seems to be true for the last three and here for the last two. The first block is again, that's a number of patients who just don't meaningfully co-cluster with others with respect to these proteins, yeah? Now, purely mathematically, we could simply say that first chunk there, that's just many singleton clusters, yeah? Or we could say that's one cluster that's very noisy. Mathematically, you could say that, but it's the equivalent of throwing in additional covariates in your regression. By adding so much noise, you're going to swamp the little signal that's in the rest of the data. And that's actually true. Like, we played around with it and did some simulation. And it turns out if you don't explicitly allow for that one cluster of just noise and you try to also make sense out of it, then the inference will suffer. Same long story in different words. What we do is we go after a partition of the columns. We want to cluster the columns. In our case, proteins. So from now on, when I say columns, I'll just equivalently say proteins. And nested within each column cluster, I want to have a nested partition of the samples. And the storyline is these are protein activation data. We want to have subsets of proteins that give rise to coherent partitions of the patients in possibly different ways. Now, if all what we wanted was to get this clustering and it stares in our face, then there's no need for statistics. Like many of you might, do you know R? In R, there's a function H-cluster, hierarchical clustering. Many of you, probably in some package, you know a clustering function, yeah? There are many clustering algorithms that are of the kind data in, clusters out, means deterministic, yeah? And there are many really good algorithms. Some of you might have heard about k-means clustering. It's a very popular one. If you're in computer science, you will probably hear it sooner or later. So if all what you want is to find clusters, use k-means clustering or whatever is your favorite thing. That's a deterministic thing. There's no notion of probability. Data in, clusters out. For two reasons, we want to have more here. First of all, we don't expect it to be so clear-cut as, I don't know, music tastes. Yeah? If we start talking about our music tastes, we'll probably quickly find clusters, right? Maybe I'm a singleton, yeah? But still a cluster, yeah? We don't expect clear-cut clusters here, so we expect things to be quite uncertain. We want to quantify that uncertainty. That's why we want to have a probability model. Another reason is we don't think of this as the final target of our inference. Once you learn about the clusters and subpopulations, you want to do something about it, yeah? You could use these subpopulations, like as you slowly start to learn about subpopulations, you could drive your decisions in a clinical study, yeah? For example, you could start to give different treatments to patients who fall into different clusters, things like that you could start doing. And the moment that you have to make decisions, and those decisions are related with some consequences, like which patients suffer or get treated, are you with me? Then you should try to do things optimally, taking uncertainties into account, or you want to solve a formal decision problem, in which case you need a probability model, yeah? So I just wanted to highlight, point out this is different from clustering as a deterministic algorithm. What we want is we want to describe all the uncertainties here. We want to see the cluster. I want to talk about the clustering. I want to talk about the partition as a random thing. Are you okay with that? Yeah.
So instead of saying that I have one set of data and that gives me one kind of clustering, you have different kinds of clustering with different probabilities attached to them.
For the same data set.
For the same data set.
Yes. Right. Very good point. Whereas deterministic clustering, for one data set, you get one clustering.
Right.
To see a different clustering, you would need to get a different data set. Whereas here, you give me one data set, and I'll try to, I want to formalize the notion that I'm not sure about that clustering. For example, kind of tough, yeah? It's really tough to see clustering here because, for display purposes, I permuted the indices, of course, right? So that similar things are next to each other. But before you do that permutation of the rows and columns, that looks just like a broken TV picture. Yeah. Do you guys still know broken TV pictures from the old movies, maybe? Yeah. But so we want to formalize the notion that there's uncertainties, and we want to write it down as a probability model. It's a weird thing, yeah? Do you realize what I just said? A monstrosity, kind of. Like, if you have had probability one or so, you must have talked about random variables, like real-valued ones, integer-valued ones. Do you realize here we have a random thing that is not a real number, it's not an integer? It's like that structure. It's the clustering. Same thing in different words. Do you see the white vertical lines are the column clustering? The horizontal lines are the row clustering. I want to put the probability model on the white lines. Are you okay with that?
So you have to quantify that, quantify a way of clustering as you have to map that to a single number or something.
To a probability, yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
No,
it's a good way. I mean, these are paid for questions, yeah, because the answers are coming up on the next few slides. To start talking about it, to start with, I need to index my partitions, means I have to invent notation. I have to come up with notation to describe the clustering, right? And then for a given clustering, so I'll come up with notation to describe the clustering. That won't be difficult, yeah? It's easy if we'll just talk a few minutes. And then once I have that notation, then I want to put a probability model on any given instance of that notation, right? Like, for example, we could probably sit now and we could talk, maybe you can shift that line over here and rearrange the lines a little bit and would still make sense. Unlikely, but possible, right? And we could keep on talking, yeah? This one looks cleaner than the real data. Real data, of course, always looks messy, yeah? I was kind of tickled pink when you plastered the math building with the announcement. Because the picture was just one big black rectangle, yeah? but I guess you all have fantasy to fill in what might be there. So that's the plan. So what's coming up is, first I'll have to talk you through a notation to characterize a cluster arrangement. And you see there's really two dimensions of clustering going on. Clustering of proteins, and nested within that, clustering of patients within each protein subset. So I'll invent notation, I'll give you a probability model for it, and we'll talk a little bit about what it means to do inference. That's what's coming up, yeah? Comment?
It's the underlying model parameterized on one, the algorithm, because the algorithm may not, it's really do some clustering, right?
Good point. Deterministic algorithms is a different world, yeah? So deterministic algorithms for clustering, that would be data in, clustering out. What I want here is I want a notation to describe the clustering, and then I put a probability model on it. Means like a fuzzy world. I'm not sure what the clustering is.
But there isn't within limits, right? There's some crazy pathological clustering that even a non-deterministic algorithm will never produce.
Yes.
So you don't consider them as part of your uncertainty.
I hope that they have probability zero, or a very small probability. Oh, here's a funny thing. These are 20 patients. Sorry, 20 proteins and I think 256 patients. How many cluster arrangements are there? The correct answer is a stupid question, right? Awfully many, right? There's a combinatorial explosion of how many ways you can arrange that, yeah? Like you remember from, like in probability, we usually do that, like you talk about combinatorial, like how many ways you can deal a hand of in poker of a triple and a pair. Those are relatively easy. But how many ways are there to arrange the columns in clusters and then nested clusters for the rows? That's kind of a combinatorial explosion. It's awfully many. So do you agree it's awfully many, but finitely many? It's not infinitely many, yeah? Like if you sit here for long enough, we could actually enumerate them all, yeah? It will be a horror number, but it's fine. Well, the important thing is it's finitely many, yeah? So once you know it's finitely many, do you realize my life is easy? Because first, I'll invent notation. That will not be too difficult. All what I need is like a nice notation with Greek letters and so to indicate my white lines, right? And then once I have the notation, I have to write down a probability model. And at that moment, I kind of run into good luck because when I write down a probability model for my cluster arrangement, by what I just said, you realize in principle it can write down anything. It doesn't really matter. Sorry, it better be non-negative. Yeah, as long as I write down, like in principle, I can do the following thing. So I'll have some notation. I'll actually use a vector of indicator C. So this will be my notation for the clustering. Yeah. When I try to invent a probability model for this, so I have to put something here on the right-hand side. And here's the good news. You can put anything here. You have to write proportional to, anything that's non-negative, right? Because if there's anything non-negative on the right-hand side, do you remember probability distribution better be non-negative and all the probabilities better add up to 1, right? So as long as this thing is non-negative, I can always make it add up to 1 just by dividing by the sum of it, yeah? You don't want to ever have to figure out that sum, yeah? But in principle, anything non-negative here goes, kind of, yeah? And we'll still talk about that, but that's an implication of the fact that there's only finitely many. This was only the first slide. But it's really everything, like everything in the rest of the talk is just going to put substance to that first, just going to rehash everything, yeah? Any comments about stating the problem? So already in the first slide, I cheated you twice, big way. Yeah?
So how do you write that vector?
The vector of indicators? Oh, that's coming up, yeah? Coming up. Let me tell you the two cheats, I might as well. Cheat number one. When I told you the story, I said that the different subsets of proteins, the fiction is that the different subsets of proteins correspond to different biologic processes. At that moment, you should have screamed. So I guess most of you know more biology than me, but do you realize that like many proteins or many genes, like there are some of them that feature in just about any possible pathway. They're like busybodies among the proteins, yeah? Like in cancer, I'm used to there's like some genes that pop up all the time, yeah? How do you feel about the clustering now, thinking about that? See, clustering, do you remember the definition of clustering or partition? A partition is a family of non-overlapping subsets whose union is the entire set. That sounds like a really stupid way of formalizing my storyline, because you want to allow for, it's even indicated here, right? You want to allow for some proteins to feature in two different biologic processes, right? Or in other words, using clustering to find subsets of proteins that correspond to different biologic processes is probably not particularly smart, because in reality, there should be proteins that feature in multiple processes. There might be proteins that feature in no known process that I allow, because see that big right block, that's just noise. But we should probably allow for overlapping subsets. And if somebody had screamed about that, they would have said, good comment. That's things that are done. That's called then feature allocation models. Many of you might know one of the classic applications of feature allocation is, do you know the Netflix data? Like, you know Netflix, the movie guys? They're trying to understand people's movie preferences. So what they do is, they try to find, well, not biologic processes. They're looking at like different characteristics of movies, yeah? Comedy, foreign movie, this movie, that movie. And then the patients are like the customers, and different customers like or don't like certain features of the movie. But they allow that you like more than one feature, right? You might like comedy, you might even like comedy and drama at the same time. There are many people who might like that, yeah? So you might want to split your set of customers into subset of people who like drama, subset of people who like comedy, and they allow for overlap, right? That's then called feature allocation, and that's important, and many people do that. We have one colleague here in UT. Anyone here from the business school by any chance? So the business school has a really strong quantitative group, IROM, I think they call it. And one woman, Sinead Williamson, she does feature allocation models, yeah? So if you talk with her, she'll happily tell you about feature allocation models. So that was cheat number one, yeah? I have to confess, it's simply a cheat. Like in math, you often do that. Like when you describe an experiment, you do a stylized, simplified description, and you're simply aware that you're ignoring some details. Yeah, that was one detail that we ignored. So another cheat is, I told you I'll put a probability model on my clustering, right? And so my aim in life, my ultimate aim in life is, given the data, I want to summarize my information as a probability model on the clustering. When you have a probability when you have a probability model on a real variable, say X is a real valued random variable, when we have a probability model, well, we can even draw the probability model. So you get the density. And if you want to summarize it, well, for example, you can report the mean. So here is x bar. That's the integral of x, p of x dx, right? So for a real valued random variable, you can report the mean, yeah? I tried to brainwash you into accepting that we can put a probability distribution on the cluster arrangements, right? It's not obvious how the hell do you summarize such a probability distribution. There's no such thing as an average clustering arrangement, right? If I tell you with probability 0.5, you get this one. With probability 0.2, this guy shifts down. With probability 0.1, that guy shifts over here. That's a probability distribution on these guys. It's not easy to summarize it. Or in other words, when I show you pictures like this, it's not obvious what those pictures show, yeah? If we get back to that, let's talk about it in the end. It's not obvious how to summarize a probability distribution on a structure like a cluster arrangement, yeah?
But if you're looking at the most probable value, that would be a single.
Good point. I could go after the one with the highest probability. There are so many different cluster arrangements, the guy with highest probability might have a probability of 0.0001. The guy with second highest probability might have probability 0.00007, yeah? And they might look totally different. But they, I mean, that's a good shot, yeah? Good point. So there's no clip and clear answer to that. So all what's coming up, this is based on actual joint work. If anyone wants to, I'm more than happy to send you the paper, but it's really boring, yeah? with two colleagues, Chu-Hee Lee, who is now in UC Santa Cruz, and Yuan Chi, who is now in Chicago. At the time when we did it, we were all three together in MD Anderson in Houston. So I already talked you through the problem. Like the problem that we are trying to address is we want to cluster patients differently with respect to different sets of proteins, with the notion being that subsets of proteins correspond to different biologic processes. We want to explicitly allow for some proteins. So the proteins are also sometimes called features in reference to the generalization to feature allocation. We want to allow for some samples, and we want to allow for some proteins not to meaningfully be involved in the clustering. Those were the explicit blocks of noise. And we want to describe the clustering as a random variable. We want to describe it as a probability model on a random partition, in contrast to doing it deterministically. So to actually talk about this, I have to introduce notation. Before I introduce notation for the clustering, I just want to quickly talk about one paradigm of statistics that we'll take here. Now, I don't assume that all of you know statistics, right? Like, I assume you're mathematically literate, but you haven't necessarily all been through, what is it, 378K? So just a quick executive summary of what I think statistics is about. Usually it's all about you get some data. Let's generically call the data Y. In our case, it's the observed protein activation, right? And on the basis of that data, we want to make inference about some underlying structure, in our case, the clustering, right? Or generically, there's some hypothetical sampling model. The sampling model is just a kind of description of the experiment that gave rise to the data. Yeah. For example, if the data were a list of heights, then the sampling model would describe how did you collect these heights. A typical sampling model could be that you randomly select a student from campus and you take the height. Yeah. In this case, our protein activation. It arises by measuring protein activation for these 200-something patients on these 20-something proteins when the patients actually arranged in clusters. So as part of the description, there's this parameter theta, or there's the unknown quantity theta that we are after. In our case, the theta would be the description of the clustering, the description of the partition, and we want to learn about that. And one way to do that is so-called Bayesian inference for like disclosure. This is one way of doing statistics. There's another way of doing statistics too, so don't worry if you had a different story. Under Bayesian inference, what you would do is you would take the sampling model, what's the description of the of how we think the data might be arising, yeah? And purely mathematically, and this is kind of a weird way of introducing statistics, but since all of you have some math training, I guess this could resonate with you, yeah? Describing the experiments is the sampling model. Then here's now one recipe of proceeding. What we want in the end, we want to formalize inference about that unknown guy theta, right? In our case, the clustering. And what you should expect now is some mathematically well-defined process how we go about it, and here it is. one way of going about it is, this is a probability model for y conditional on theta, right? What we could ask for now is, we could augment this to a joint probability model on y and theta by multiplying with p of theta. Do you remember, if you have two jointly distributed random variables, x and y, if you have p of y given x and you multiply with p of x, that is one way of factorizing the joint p of x, y, right? So purely mathematical description, this would be a horror to introduce statistics like this to a general audience, but scream if you are not okay with that, yeah? So we take our sampling model, we augment it to a joint probability model on the data and the unknown guys. That gives a joint probability model on y and theta. That's the recipe. And then once we have the joint probability model, once you have a joint probability model, with respect to the joint probability model, marginals are defined, conditionals are defined. And in particular, once we have the joint probability model, that also implies a conditional p of theta given y. Like once you have a joint, this guy is defined, right? Can you read it in plain English as our judgment on the unknown guys, including the unknown clustering, in the light of the observed data? That's exactly what we want, right? Are you okay with that? So this was like a two-line description of statistics, yeah? I mean, if you're okay with the notion that there's a joint probability model and that implies everything, in particular it implies this conditional, and are you okay with the notion that this is the conditional that we want? Because we want to condition on the stuff that we have seen, right? Conditioning on the stuff that we have seen, we want to describe the uncertainties, we want to describe the information on the stuff that we have not seen. That's it. There were several monstrosities stuck in this description, but you're okay with it. For example, I ask my mother-in-law for her weight. Why is the answer that I get, yeah? What she'll tell me, it is something, it probably depends on her real weight, theta, right? And I have my suspicions of what's the probability model, yeah? So I can formalize my suspicions about how she would answer as p of y given theta, yeah? See, what I tell you now is that we should take my suspicion here and substitute the favorite suspicions. I tell you we should multiply with some p of theta to get a joint probability model on the answer that I get and on the true weight. This is now a joint probability model on y and theta jointly. You okay with that? See, this is, so this is a dangerous game I'm doing now, yeah? I tell you why you might want to object that, yeah, just to proceed with it then anyway. Yeah? You could argue the following way. The true weight of my mother-in-law, I don't happen to know it, yeah? But there's nothing random about it. It's a specific number, right? Let's make it even worse. When you take introductory physics courses, they'll talk like through historical experiments when they try to measure the speed of light, right? Do you remember there's like some experiments, you measure something and then they're like, a stylized description of the experiment could describe the distribution of the observed measurement if the true speed of light is theta. The simplest thing could be if the, you observe the true speed of light with some measurement error, give or take, I don't know what. Yeah. Do you see what this recipe would ask us for? This would ask us to put here a probability model for the speed of light. Isn't that crazy? The speed of light is a natural constant. There's nothing we get to choose it. There's nothing random about it. Yeah. Yet that's what I'm asking you to do. Yeah. See, I think it's okay because question: what is the speed of light? So I think it's somewhere around 300,000 kilometers per second. Does it sound about right? So it's somewhere around 300,000 kilometers per second. I'm not sure about it. I think it's actually a little less, yeah?
It's 299,000.
You're terrible. Hey, wait a minute. You cheated me out of some decimals now, yeah? So if we keep on talking, like he immediately nailed it down to even there, but if we keep on talking now, we probably can get something like this to describe our collective uncertainty about the speed of light. Are you okay with that? And this is just characterizing our uncertainty about the speed of light. It's describing our information. The fact that the speed of light is a natural constant and we don't get to choose anything about it is a different story, but it doesn't prevent us from characterizing our uncertainty, okay? But many people might on philosophical grounds object doing that, yeah? There's nothing random about the parameters. There's some unknown, it's unknown to us, but it doesn't make it random. You could argue. I would say it's unknown to me, so I have a distribution on it that characterizes my uncertainties. But not obvious, yeah? This gets into the issue of what probabilities are, yeah? In this case, we use probabilities to describe subjective uncertainties, which we often do, yeah? Like, what's your probability that we have a government in 10 days again, yeah? No, I mean, like everyone has different probabilities. We can put them together. We can create a histogram, things like that. Like it's very common to use probabilities to describe subjective uncertainties. There's no notion of repeated. In this case, it keeps on happening over and over again. But we can put probabilities on an event that happens only once too. Yeah. This was very weird. This is it. Yeah. This is. Do you all know how to get this one from that one up there? Do you remember Bayes' theorem from probability? P of theta given y is equal P of y given theta times P of theta divided by P of y, right? This was a real brutal description of statistical inference, but if you're okay with it, we're on the same wavelength, yeah? In a way, that's all there is, yeah? Then to actually do it is a pain, and that's what I'm going to talk you through in this particular example. So back to our problem. So I promised you notation for the random for the partition. And once I have notation, then life will get easy. Remember, then I gave myself already a clean sheet. I can write anything, and I hope you'll be okay with it. Yeah. So we need notation. Let's denote with 1 through cap G the indices of the proteins. G is mnemonic for gene because many times these kinds of problems are with gene expression instead of protein activation. So here's my understanding of biology, and don't leak that out that I don't know more than that. Yeah, genes code for proteins. Proteins make us. Is that kind of it? G index is the proteins here. Then W is the set of all proteins. Then a partition or a clustering, I'll use them synonymously. A partition is simply a family of subsets W1 through WS. Yeah. So in the earlier thing, we had W1 through W3. In particular, keep in mind that the number of subsets, the cap S itself, is random too, right? We don't know how many there are. So I'll use W1 through WS, I'll use to describe my partition, where the subsets are such that they are non-overlapping, and we already talked a little bit about how crazy that is. So I'll just use that, that's known as, people often describe it as a multi-set, like a family of subsets, we often call a multi-set. I'll either describe my clustering as this multi-set rho, Or alternatively, totally equivalently. See, if I tell you, for every gene, sorry, for every protein, if I tell you which partitioning subset is in, that tells you the same thing, right? Like I can either tell you the three of us are one cluster in terms of music tastes, or I can tell you our music taste is one, one, one. That also means we're in the same cluster, right? Are you with me that I can introduce such, these are cluster membership indicators. If WG is 3, then protein G is in cluster number 3. If WG is 1, then protein G is in cluster 1. Or in other words, I could describe my clusters on the, this is again a picture like the first slide, this is the actual data now, yeah? See, for all these proteins, WG is 1, means they're all sitting in the first cluster. Of course, I rearranged the columns such that they're all together, yeah? WG is 2 for all these guys, 3 for all those, 4 for all those. And remember, the last one was a special one. That was my catch-all cluster of noise. I give it a special index. I call it 0, yeah? So in other words, my W sub G indicators, they completely describe the partition. I'll use those guys. Earlier I said C, I should have said W, yeah? C will be the indicators for the rows. Very smart, C, like row, whatever, yeah? So my W indicators, they describe the partition, and so now our initial problem reduces to putting a probability model on the W vector, right? That's not so bad anymore. Oh, coming up, yeah? So this is only putting the notation on the... good point. This is only putting the notation on the clustering of the proteins, yeah? On the next slide, I'll put notation on the clustering of the patients. How do you think I'll do it? Same thing, of course, right? Except I have to do the same thing multiple times, yeah? I'll index my column sets with little s, little s equal 1 through cap s. And for each of the little s column sets, I have a different partition of the rows, right? Except for the zero guy. The zero guy doesn't give rise to a partition. And mathematically, that's not important because I could simply say, these are two singleton clusters. Practically, it's important because you want to separate out the noise to improve your power. So what's coming up now on the next slide is the same thing again, now for the patients. And I have to do it separately for each column set, right? So for each column set, for each protein subset, you see indicators C sub I for the cluster membership of the IF patient. And again, I allow for the special cluster of C sub I equals 0. Those are patients who do not meaningfully co-cluster with other patients with respect to that biologic process. See, if, for example, if this one here, if these were like different types of prostate cancer, these might simply be patients or samples without prostate cancer, yeah? Like when you get samples, sometimes like they don't, like when you get biopsies, you get a mix of things and there might just be no cancer tissue in that one, yeah? We need double index on the C indicators because there's a different set of C sub I for each column set. So here's C1I, and here's C2i, and so on, right? We're almost done, because now we have notation, and in some of these problems, notation is half the solution, yeah? The actual solution will then be almost trivial, right? Because I already gave myself a license to put in anything, yeah? You're too nice to me, yeah? And there are some issues, right? We'll come to those still. So we do it for all of them. And so now I have notation, now I'm ready to put my prior, right? What I need is a probability model for the W. Are you with me that the W is a discrete random variable, right? There is actually only finitely many possibilities. So what I really need is a probability mass function, right? Like for each possible clustering, I have to give you a probability. And that's easy because that means I can almost do anything. And I'll do exactly that. For the moment, you can almost ignore what's there on the right-hand side. The only thing you have to check, like if you want to play probability police, all that you have to check is that the thing on the right side is non-negative. Yeah, it better not be negative. As long as it's positive, At most, you might slap my fingers that I need a proportional sign, yeah? But I've actually already normalized it, and it's up to one, yeah? So this thing on the right-hand side, all that you should watch is that this is non-negative. That's my probability model for the clustering. I'll still talk you through more details on this, yeah? It's actually a famous probability model. So there's a probability model on clustering the columns. Now I need a probability model for clustering the rows. Which one do you think I will use? Same thing again, right? So here's a probability model for clustering the rows. There's not only one C vector of C indicators, there's multiple of them, right? One for each column subset. So here's my probability model for clustering the rows. So we're making good headway. I have now a probability model for cluster. I have now a prior probability model for the clustering of the columns. I have a prior probability model. Did I tell you that was called the prior? The red thing. Remember in my two-line lecture of statistics, I told you take the sampling model and multiply with a P of theta. That P of theta is known as the prior model because it quantifies a prior uncertainty before you see the data. Yeah. So this is my red probability model for the sample clusters. There's one minor complication. I should have pointed it out. See, in that stuff on the right-hand side, and you really don't have to focus on what this stuff is, but one thing is, in that stuff, there's some things popping up. There's a M and a pi 1. So those are like additional parameters that I use to write down my model for the C. So what I have to do is I have to complete my probability model, I have to still multiply with a probability model for the psi is just the M and the C now. So the psi is just the M and the pi 1 in this case. So to really complete my probability model, I still need a probability model on the psi 1 here, and on the previous slide there was a psi 0. But once I have that, I'm done, because the theta in our case, the unknown guys, are the clustering of the columns. It was the W. And the nested clustering of the samples, that was the C. So the theta is the W and the C. I have a model on the W and the C. I just tell you there is a model for these hyperparameters. Ooh, I didn't tell you the sampling model yet. The sampling model is nothing fancy, it's just normal sampling, yeah? Like, I just assume normal distributions. because the colors, the red and the green that I showed you initially, those are really intensities, yeah? And just transform the intensities, like, say, do a log transformation, and then I assume normal distributions. So this is a normal distribution. This is my model from the previous two slides, and this is something, yeah? Multiply them all and we have a joint probability model on everything. And once you have a joint probability model on everything, now we can go ahead and we can think about the probability for the theta guys. Those are the guys that we want. That's like the vertical white lines and the horizontal white lines, given the data. That's what we want, right? And that should be coming up. But before that, I had planned to tell you some comments about my prior model on the clustering. I think I'll skip it unless you want it differently. I wanted to talk a little bit more about my weird prior model on the clustering. Maybe I'll just make one comment about it without talking you through all the glorious details. Then I want to tell you how to summarize our... I should have given you the name. In my two-line description of statistics, what we had is we started out with the sampling model. We multiplied with this one to complete it to a joint probability model. I never told you at that time that this was called the prior. And then I told you once we have the joint, we can turn the thing around and we can get this one. And I told you in plain English, you use a formula which is known as Bayes' theorem. And I told you that this summarizes our information on the unknown guys given the observed data, right? And I didn't tell you the name for this model. This is known as the posterior distribution. This mnemonic, right? This is what you know about the speed of light before you carry out your experiments. then I'm completed to a probability model in Y and Theta by multiplying with the sampling model for the experimental data, given some assumed truth for the speed of light. Then you use probability calculus to find the reverse conditional. Like, see, this conditional is of no interest. If you knew the speed of light, well, then I wouldn't carry out the experiments, right? We need it just to complete our probability model, but by itself it's not of interest. Then we use probability calculus to find, to turn it around and find P of theta given Y. This is the information on the unknown guys given the data, right? And that's known as the posterior. So what I had planned is talk you through my prior model a bit more. Like, I was a little bit flippant by just saying you can write anything there, yeah? And then I wanted to talk a little bit through how to summarize this posterior model, yeah? In principle, we can get it just by using this formula. But I wanted to talk a little bit through how to summarize it, and then I wanted to show you examples. I have a hot 5 minutes or so. When am I supposed to stop? I won't do that to you. I know what it feels like. So at one time, I was giving a talk in Spain somewhere. And so usually when you give a talk, you ask the customary polite question, how much time do I have? And you expect an answer like 45 minutes, 50 minutes, 1 hour. It's considered very rude to go over time, right? And so the guys go 3 hours. If they were just trying to be polite, time passes very fast when you stand out here in front, yeah? But I know it drags on when you're sitting there on the other side, yeah? So I had to talk for 3 hours. It's not the problem when you stand outside, yeah? But this can be a real bore when you're sitting there. Here's my plan. I just want to talk you through something about how to summarize this guy and then show you some pretty pictures. one more comment about this prior probability model on the clustering. See, in principle, you can write here anything. But if you write anything, the following very embarrassing thing could happen. When you cluster n plus 1 guys, wouldn't it be nice if the implied marginal on clustering n guys would match what you would give me as a recipe for clustering n guys, yeah? If not, the following funny thing would happen. If you work with a clinician, yeah, and you have 56 patients, and you use your probability model for clustering 56 patients. Before doing your inference, you would have to ask back, are you ever going to recruit a 57th patient? Because if you ever think about the 57th patient, I need a different model, right? Or same thing in different words, your model better be coherent across different sample size, which is not trivial, yeah? So the stuff that you write here on the right-hand side better be coherent across sample size. And another thing is, it better be symmetric in the indices because the patients at this time, the data is like de-identified. Yeah? There's nothing special anymore about different patients. Like clustering 1 and 3 together should have the same probability a priori before you see the data as clustering 17 and 21 together. So you want symmetry and you want to have coherence across sample sizes. And that's actually not a trivial thing. Blah, blah, blah. This might be the end of it. I can't go. Why is this stopping here? Oof. it's not Windows, otherwise I knew why it stops. I mean, things stopped there, but I probably have a funny thing here. No? I have an old version of my slides here. You have the new version there. Anyway, since we only have a few minutes, I might as well just talk you through it. Because by the time I download the updated one, our time is over. So at the end of this, like we are going to use probability calculus to find this posterior distribution, yeah? And then once we have this posterior probability distribution, we can evaluate the probability for any partition, for any cluster arrangement. But as I tried to already mention in the beginning, that doesn't solve anything because there's probabilities for different cluster arrangements. You want to summarize it somehow, yeah? Like if you're talking with a basic science collaborator, so they don't care about probability models. They want to see a summary, yeah? And there's no such... to see a summary, one thing you might want to do is you might want to simulate random cluster arrangements and then you can plot them and you can show them to your collaborator, right? So once you have these probabilities, question, once you have these probabilities, how do you simulate from them? Does anybody have a suggestion? So for any cluster arrangement that you give me, I can give you a probability. many of you know R. In R, how would you write R code now to simulate cluster arrangements? Now, here's a trick, and it's a very nasty trick. Who knows Markov chains? So most of you probably know Markov chains exist, right? When you talked about Markov chains in probability 101, your standard problem was, here's a Markov chain, find the limiting distribution, right? That's the standard problem. Are you with me? Markov chains are ultimately easy to simulate in a computer. Because by definition, if you know the current state, you know how to simulate the next state, right? Which is easy to do in the computer. You don't have to keep track of the whole history. typical problem in probability 101, you're given a Markov chain in terms of transition probabilities. So this would be the matrix of your transition probabilities. And then they ask you to find a limiting distribution, let's call it pi, right? Like you must have gone through all these little things, yeah? Like find the recurrent sets, find the transient states, blah, blah, yeah? Wouldn't it be nice if we could find a Markov chain where this is our desired posterior? If we could find such a Markov chain, then we could find its transition probabilities. And Markov chains are awfully simple to simulate in a computer. So we could simulate it, and every 10 iterations, we just make a plot, and that's what you show your collaborator. Do you realize now we have the opposite problem of that of probability 101? Given a desired stationary, we want to find a set of transition probabilities. Because once you have the transition probabilities, you can program it, right? at first glance, this might seem awfully difficult and complicated, but you run into some good luck there. It's actually damn easy. It's much easier than the opposite. Yeah. Some of you might have heard about Markov chain Monte Carlo simulation. There's popular recipes given a desired stationary. There's popular recipes how to cook up. It's like reverse engineering. Yeah, reverse engineering of probability 101. Given a desired stationary, how do you do reverse engineering to find transition probabilities? It's called Markov chain Monte Carlo simulation. If you're in CS or something like that, you'll run into that all the time. Once you have the transition probabilities, like once I tell you, given a current cluster arrangement, how do you change it? Oops, in probability 101, did you do Markov chains on cluster rings? Probably not, yeah? You probably did Markov chains on state space 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. But are you with me? You could do the same thing on different cluster arrangements, mathematically at least. So if I give you a recipe, given a particular cluster arrangement means vertical lines and horizontal lines, how do you have to wiggle them to get another one? If I give you a specific recipe in terms of a blue matrix, you can program it, right? Problem solved, because then you can simulate the cluster arrangements, plot 10 of them, that's your summary of the posterior. And what I'm missing now is some pretty pictures from the actual data. Yeah, if anyone cares, send me an email. I happily reply with the PDF file. And in black and white, it's actually printed here. Yeah, I made the slides on another computer, and I didn't synchronize. I used to have the problem a lot. Like when you have a laptop and a desktop, half the time you don't know what is on which one. There's a very nifty little utility. Is anybody using Unison? Right price, public domain. You can synchronize everything across all computers you use. I usually do it, just somehow I forgot to do it. Yeah, something really scary about Unison. It's damn fast. That means the thing obviously keeps track of what you do all day long. That's scary. Yeah. yeah.
So Monte Carlo simulation, the Y that you want to pick, are you
going to
randomly pick random Ys?
The Y is fixed, yeah? The theta is the state space. So if you're used to seeing transition probabilities as a matrix, there would be different thetas here. There's awfully many, yeah? But finitely many. And we're never going to write out the matrix, yeah? But conceptually. Like here's one theta, here's another theta. Theta being the pair of, we called it W and C. Like this is simply the vertical and horizontal lines in my picture, yeah? And what I have to tell you is, given one set of horizontal and vertical lines, how do you jump to another set of horizontal lines and vertical lines?
So you just randomly reassign?
Well, not randomly. You have to do it in, I mean, that's the solution here. You want to do it in such a way that the stationary distribution is exactly what you want to see. It's like reverse engineering. From probability calculus, we know the probability model that characterizes our information on the vertical and horizontal lines. But knowing the probability model, that watch is totally wrong. Knowing the probability model doesn't solve anything, right? Because you could chase down the best one. That's a good idea. But in this particular case, even that doesn't give you much, yeah? Like you want to randomly generate some and plot them. And this is a... You can do that by engineering a Markov chain that has this one as a stationary distribution. And then you simulate that Markov chain, simulate transitions, and after every 10 transitions, make a pretty plot. And those transitions, they are not there. It's tough to kind of pull it out of thin air, but that's exactly the MCMC thing. Yeah? It tells you how to do that. It's amazingly easy, yeah, once you get into that. But so the Y all through this is fixed. The theta is the state of the Markov chain. The vertical and horizontal lines are the W and the C. This was a bit a very brutal and short description, yeah? And I tried almost the impossible. Like, I tried to talk you through all of statistics in two lines. I tried to tell you about putting notation on clusters how to put probability models on them. Like on all of these things, you can spend entire classes, yeah? So I hope I gave you some flavor of how to proceed with these things. Like what I wanted to talk about a problem that's not totally trivial, yeah? So I thought learning about clustering is not totally trivial, and it's important. Like, can you imagine? I find that funny when, do you read the newspaper and what the NSA does on us, right? And they justify it by, like, they are trying to look for a needle in a haystack. I think that's wrong. They're not looking for a needle in a haystack. They're just piling up many, many haystacks, yeah? Or in other words, there's no way, they're collecting so much data, there's no way they have any real information, yeah? Or that's totally non-trivial, yeah? And one of the things that you might want to do is clustering, yeah? Like, if you cluster people in different groups, then you can start thinking about things, yeah? And when you want to do clustering with huge data sets you want to make decisions, you need uncertainties, right? In this case, it was decisions about patients, yeah? Like it's the holy grail of cancer treatment that you can target your therapy to like the way how every patient is different, yeah? has plus and minus. There's, by the way, when you build clusters of cancer patients, do you realize you want big clusters? Singleton clusters are totally uninteresting because you're not going to develop a treatment for a tiny subpopulation. Like you want sizable clusters such that it's commercially interesting, otherwise nobody can pay for the drug development. So there's interesting issues there, right? You want sizable clusters, but they should still be kind of different in a sense, in the way of how they respond to treatment. They should be characterized in terms of something that you can easily measure, like measuring some biomarkers is reasonably cheap and easy, yeah? Any comments, questions, complaints?
There are no questions. Let's thank our speaker.
Thank you.